I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to New York, Judy.
Did it end early this time?
That fade keeps coming faster and faster.
They just want more goodness out of our mouths.
That's it, because it is a fast 30 minutes, the fastest 30 minutes on the internet today.
Let's get right to our guest.
Let's get right to it.
We've got John Strasbaugh, author, well...
author, writer, journalist, historian.
Editor of the New York Press, of one editor of the
where we were both inmates on and off for a while.
Yes. And his new book is called The Village. Like your book, Mike, it has a giant subtitle. I have to put on my granny glasses. 400 Years of Beats, Bohemians, Radicals, and Rogues, A History of Greenwich Village.
400 years?
400 years.
Yeah.
Well, that's what got me in the door.
That's rounding it up a little. It's actually about 300
considering,
years.
Considering this is a country that's only 240 years old, more or less. Yeah. 400 years of Greenwich Village?
1620.
1620.
Yeah, so when did it get named Greenwich Village?
You know, there's a lot of question about that, but it didn't become really known as Greenwich Village until like the 1920s when the real estate guys were marketing it as Ye Olde Greenwich Village. And then before that, it was like the 15th ward and the 9th ward, the way most neighborhoods.
So even then, real estate guys were renaming neighborhoods to make them sound pretty like Clinton.
You know, exactly. And finding, you know, where the artists and the bohemians were hanging out and, you know, moving in, raising the rents, kicking them out, and bringing in people by calling it, you know, Ye Olde Greenwich Village. 1920.
Now, I want to ask you this, because you define Greenwich Village. Now, we move it all the way to the river on the west side.
Yeah,
okay, so what we call the West Village, and that, I agree with that, of course.
Yep.
And, I agree that Houston Street would be the southern edge, and I know it used to be called South Greenwich Village below Houston Street before it was Soho. But
South
going
Village,
east, I feel pretty strongly that the border is the Bowery. That you draw it at Broadway,
yeah.
But that means that the Cooper Union isn't really in Greenwich Village, because to me, Astor Place, you know, that's sort of like the entry to the East Village there and the Strand. Greenwich Village of my mind.
I hear you. No, I figure that's the Lower East Side or even NoHo. NoHo, even though it was an invented relatively new term, is not a bad term for that sort of dead man zone in between. So you got Greenwich Village. I just take it up to Broadway. Also, partly because the book would have had to have been twice as long as if I kept going, you know, farther east with it, too.
That's a big block right there.
Yeah, I was thinking of myself here, too. But I also want to do the Lower East Side as a book at some point. So I thought, all right, I'm going to cut it at Broadway and, you know.
Well, the Lower East Side, too, the top boundary, that would be Houston Street, I'm guessing, the Lower East Side versus the East Village?
Well, there's another thing. So, you know, it wasn't the East Village until people started calling it that in the late 50s. So, no. I think the Lower East Side, you go all the way up to 14th Street, the same as you do for Greenwich Village.
And certainly that is some controversial stuff we're talking about.
Well, I think it's important to get your bearings, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Like I said, the Greenwich Village of my mind. And, you know, like we were talking, you know, before, we both, you know, live in Brooklyn now, but we both, you know, came to New York to live in Manhattan.
Absolutely.
Manhattan was the thing, and my idea was when I was a kid, I was going to move to Greenwich Village because that's where the beatniks and the bohemians, that's where the action was, that's the scene was, that's what I romanticized in the Greenwich Village of my mind, of course. Then it became, you know, you realize it became a tourist place, and the money was out there. Although I discovered this wonderful bar, I must have been about 15, down on Christopher Street, where old men would buy me drinks. It was absolutely
I wonder why.
Fantastic.
Still there, the only they won't be
it was
buying
absolutely
drinks
fantastic.
Anymore.
Yeah, and there's not too many of those bars left over there anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the whole, the the gay population has been shrinking there. I mean, unless that you're like a super moneyed gay dude.
Yeah, it's if you're you know, a gay celebrity, you can live there, a gay movie star, but gay guys, just guys. Actually, you know, they've been leaving since the 80s, but I just saw that Boots and Saddles lost its lease and, yep, and it's, yeah, it's gone. So
I think they found a new place, though. We can ask Jeremiah when,
okay, good,
when we get him on. Good. Who? So out of researching 400 years, yeah, like you must have come across a lot of characters. Like, who were some of your favorites?
Tons of them. Like, kind of anybody who was anybody in the arts and culture, not just in America, but in the world, at least passed through Greenwich Village in the 20th century. And the later 19th century, there was everybody.
It's, you know, very fertile.
Yeah, and when you think about what a tiny, you know, footprint that place is, you can walk through it in 15 minutes. But everybody was there, from like Khalil Gibran to, you know, the Beats and Kerouac and all those guys, and all the folk people, and Jimi Hendrix got discovered there, and the Fugs, and it just
and the
on.
Abstract Expressionists, the painters,
all the abstract
that came out
expressionists
of Greenwich Village
were there. All the dance people, the avant-garde film people were all there. Everybody was in. If they weren't in Greenwich Village, they were on the Lower East Side, one or the other.
Have you ever lived there?
When I moved to New York about 25 years ago, my first apartment was at 10th and 6th, where it was like, you know, Mardi Gras every night.
Right.
So the apartment was weird and stupid. So I left after a year and moved over to Suffolk Street, and then I lived on the Lower East.
Wow, on 10th Street and 6th Avenue, in the corner there used, yeah, to be a sort of coffee shop that when I got to Greenwich Village in 1982, when I was an inmate at NYU for a little bit, I got out for time served after just a couple years. But there was a coffee shop that I later became a Blimpy, and now it's sort of like a bistro or a patisserie or something kind of fancy across. Where what I think is the original Ray's Pizza, what we regard as the original Ray's Pizza, probably, on 6th Avenue. Yeah. But that seemed to be some holdout, like beatnik holdout. Because remember, we'd go in there and get coffee.
John Waters used to love that place. He used to go in there.
We loved it.
All the time.
And we got invited to these crazy parties. I was like 18, and, yeah, you know, these old guys with white beards like thought we were cool because we'd hang out there, and people were passing jugs of wine around. I mean, it was like, sort of like the last gasp of beatnik sunshine.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, and they were all there, and you know, you can't compare now to then. It's just not.
Yeah, I felt
time.
Like
now it's all high end mall stores. Yeah. But
I felt then like I could reach it. I mean, I could reach out and sort of touch the antiquity and sort of, yeah, feel the vibe of like Dylan and Van Ronk a little bit.
You know, you walk around and some of it still looks the same because, mm-hmm, you know, they've done a very good job of preserving it. You know, doing the historic preservation for the way it looks. But it's hardly the same. I define it as it was a culture engine. It was a place that attracted and nurtured people who made culture for everybody else. And it was across the boards, you know, literature, dance, music, film, everything. And, you know, who's there making culture now? Who's in
Gwyneth
Manhattan?
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Right. See, and, you know, it's just not the same.
What are you saying, Judy? What are you saying? Like, the Goop's Christmas Guide is not the apogee of Western culture?
I've been putting off
culture?
Reading the Goop's Christmas Guide because I know I'm going to want to savor it.
Where's Taylor Swift? Where's her apartment?
She's in Soho somewhere. I like the way you say apartment. You mean her complex?
Right, I know her apartment. What am I saying?
The 1989 complex?
Where's her palace?
Yeah, the
compound. Yeah.
Well, you know, people have been talking about Taylor Swift, too. It's funny, just because so much anti. She's not New York. She's not this. But celebrities have been coming to New York and exploiting since the beginning of time. So
absolutely.
I don't find her moving here and sort of, you know, planting, you know, a flag in the ground any more offensive than any other celebrity who's done
Jeremiah's
it.
Did you see Jeremiah's open letter in the Daily News when everybody was complaining about her? He was like, you know, she's the perfect spokesman for, mm-hmm, New York City in 2014. Shut up. And he's right.
Yeah.
This, her song is much worse than I ever possibly imagined it could be when I listened to it. But it has this great line in it, though. It says, we all came here wanting to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
Someone else.
Yeah.
We all came here wanting to be someone else.
Yeah.
It's a place where boys can like boys and girls can like girls. And I thought, that's not the worst message I ever heard in my life. And
no.
It's very true, and I think that speaks...
I think it used to be true.
I don't know. We came here, I mean, we were all like punk rockers and artists and somehow disenfranchised or disillusioned with suburbia, of course. We came flocking to New York to be ourselves, to find ourselves, and to reinvent ourselves.
Well, clearly, people are still doing that. It's just different people. It's not the same kind of people.
Yeah. It takes a little more budget than we had.
You know, there's some sociologists have some term for, you know, it's like it's reversed white flight. You know, the children and the grandchildren of all the white folks who left back in the 70s when it was supposedly so horrible here have come back from the suburbs because they were bored in the suburbs.
Well, and now they don't even leave when they have kids.
I mean, don't have to now. Yeah.
Oh, my God. There are babies at the bar here at Roberta's today.
There are a lot of them.
Well, you know, New York used to be a place that was scary to the people that we were trying to get away from in our suburban upbringing, whether it was Baltimore or New Jersey or wherever you were coming from. But now it welcomes exactly the people we were trying not to be.
You know, and there are an awful lot of people who like it this way. And you can't argue that it's not cleaner, it's not nicer, it's not a lot of things. But it's also, I mean, you know, I think you would agree, you guys would agree. If you're a little more old school, it's not, it's also not New York. It's not, it's certainly not Manhattan. It's just, and it's certainly not downtown. Downtown has been so uptowned that, you know, there used to be. They were not geographical designations. That was a whole cultural thing. There was downtown culture and there was uptown culture.
It was the Greenwich Village of your mind.
And no such thing
and
anymore.
And when I was just moving from the tiny little hamlet of Kipps Bay,
Kipps Bay.
You know, where I've lived for...
I go to the movies there.
15 years. I know. I love my Googleplex over there.
And you left once they got a fairway.
You know, but I
oh, yeah, they got a fairway.
The fairway was awesome.
Come on, man. What'd you eat for?
And I should plug in the fairway bagel. I mean, of all... whatever they're doing back there at the Fairway Bakery is just, they're doing some magic there.
Excellent.
I put it up with H&H or Essa Bagel or any of the great bagels in New York, the Fairway Bagel.
Oh,
they're doing something right back there. But I'll tell
and
you what.
And you left.
And I left, but, you know, I love where I live, you know, in Carroll Gardens now, trees, and it's just a lot quieter. And, you know, especially being in my 20s, being a bachelor in Manhattan, and, you know, downtown in Greenwich Village and the East Village was the place to be. But I even said when I was getting ready to move, I'd rather live on the Upper East Side than the East Village at this point.
I
never thought I'd hear those words coming out of my head.
It's cheaper. The Upper East Side is now much cheaper than.
Well, sure, you get a better apartment, you get a better space, but I don't want to live in like a frat house, which is the East Village has become. It's just, I mean, we used to sit down, you know, go to a bar in the East Village, in a normal bar, dive bar, or not so divey bar, and you never knew who you were sitting next to. Like, you talk about a culture engine. In the 80s, the East Village definitely fit that description, you know. Like I was saying, I once wanted to live in Greenwich Village, and that didn't really happen, and I thought maybe I'd buy a loft in Soho, and of course that didn't happen. But eventually I landed in the East Village, which was the next logical place, and I was surrounded by artists, by painters, by punk rockers, by failed poets, by maybe some guy who was going to become a great filmmaker.
Pains in the butt, crazy people.
And you could sit in a bar and never know who you're sitting next to. The guy could be a great theater actor, he could be a fantastic poet, he could be a novelist waiting to flourish, or just another, you know, drunk loser.
Just another drug addict.
But we all hung out together.
Steal your change.
You know, and whatever caste system that has been established in Manhattan and all of New York now just really didn't exist back then.
Well, the point is that, you know, if you're going to be a working, if you're going to try to be a working artist of any kind of culture producer, it's really, really important to have a cheap place to live and work, because in America, you're not going to get paid much to be a culture worker. And you used to be able to find those in various places in Manhattan and Greenwich Village for the longest time. And then, you know, that started to get too expensive. So then it was the Lower East Side in the East Village.
Exactly.
Soho was the cost nothing when people were first pioneering Soho. But, you know, so as the rents keep going up and the real estate prices keep going up, you're making it harder and harder and harder for the people who make culture to live there. And there's been this enormous diaspora of creative people out of the one place in the country that was the creative center of the country and in some ways the world for a long, long time, and you've kicked them all out. I mean, we're sitting in Bushwick. Now it's in Bushwick. Pretty soon this is going to get too expensive. They're going to push all the Bushwick.
It's already happening.
So,
and it's ugly. I mean,
I was talking to a guy who went from Williamsburg to Bushwick to Crown Heights and Crown... No,
Crown Heights?
No, Bed-Stuy. He went to Bed-Stuy, and Bed-Stuy was getting too expensive.
Bed-Stuy ain't what it used
Bed-Stuy
to be.
Bed-Stuy is too expensive of our for you.
Yeah, they have fancy
Where are you
going
to
be?
Where are you going to get stabbed at a White Castle?
This woman, I know, I'm on some internet group with her. She moved to Bed-Stuy, and this actually did make me laugh, because her and her uptight white boyfriend moved to this, like, really overpriced, you know, jerky house. And somebody crapped on her front step, and she was so upset. It's like, yeah, okay, you know what you represent?
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean...
Exactly. Of course they did. So, it's as though they're pushing the young... starving artist types.
And the old starving artist types, too.
You know, but who cares about us old ones? We've done our bit.
True.
But the young ones who used to come, you used to be able to come here, you could find the place. Lou Reed was spending $7 a month rent when he moved to the New York City. You know,
but
now it's $7,000 a month rent, so... you're not going to have any youngsters but who are being creative in the city anymore.
Always a barrier to entry, though, the city. You had to love it because it was hard to live here.
Oh, yeah.
And now you can sort of pay your way in. You can just sign the check and you can take it off the rack.
It looks like when I walk along the river now, it looks like I'm in Santa Monica. And Santa Monica's fine, but I didn't choose to live there. I choose to live in New York City.
Well, we're being joined by Jeremiah Moss from Jeremiah's Vanishing New York. Hey, Jeremiah, are you there?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, mystery guy.
Hey, Jeremiah.
I've got John Strasbaugh and Mike Edison in the studio with me. Welcome.
Hi, John and Mike.
Hey,
Hey, Jeremiah, I wanted to ask you right off the bat. You've been very active in trying to save my namesake cafe, the Edison Cafe. and how's that going? I was up there trying to get lunch the other day, and man, there are hundreds of people there. So you're doing something right.
It's been it's been a big success. You know, it's we've done today's the third lunch mob. We have a dinner mob with klezmer music coming up on Thursday.
Excellent.
And there have been lines out the door. People are showing up, you know, day after day with signs. And there's a documentary filmmaker there who's trying to do a movie on it, and lots of press. So, you know, it's been great.
Have you heard anything from management about what's going to happen?
I've heard nothing.
No.
I've heard nothing. No. And we got, you know, Gail Brewer, you know, Manhattan Borough President, just wrote a letter to the owner of the hotel, you know, saying, please give them a lease.
Yeah.
And it really is the last vestige of, it's really the last good place to eat in Times Square. It's the last real place.
There's Chili's and Applebee's and Red Lobster, Mike. Okay.
Olive Garden.
I don't want to hear the
Olive Garden. We can't forget about those. Olive Garden.
I heard the Olive Garden has changed their pasta recipe as well. So that just came down from the corporate Olive Garden.
So we're talking with John about his book in the about the Village. And, you know, you focus on a lot of things that are vanishing. And, you know, Bleecker Street has been basically taken over by Marc Jacobs, Washington Square Park by NYU. Where do you see the future of the Village going?
Well, I think that, you know, the future is just what you described. I don't really see it getting any better anytime soon, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. What do we need, an earthquake? A crime spree?
crime spree would probably have. Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, we had 9/11, and I think that only actually attracted more people.
Yes, it did. Yeah. Yes, it did.
That's so weird.
Yeah, ironically, yeah. Very, very weird. Very weird. Well, it became American, right? Before 9/11, New York wasn't America. It was some other place. And after 9/11, we saw all of this, you know, we are all New Yorkers. And people came flooding in.
What about the people that criticize, I mean, I posted this on Facebook today that you were coming on and people are like, oh, you know, nostalgia, it's bullshit, New York always changes.
Yeah.
I think it has never changed so quickly before.
No, I don't think so.
I would disagree with you guys. There have been periods where it changed like crazy.
By Pottery Barn?
No, I mean, like, you know, in the early 1800s, for instance, it went through this ridiculous period where people, exactly the way we say, geez, I went out the door and there was a new building across the street. Where did that come from? That was happening back in, like, the 1830s and 1840s, too. So, you know, people are right that New York City has always been changing. My thing about the most recent changes is that, just for me being like a culture type person, within those changes all the time, there was always places where you could survive in the city as a culture person, somebody making culture for everybody else. And everybody else in the city seemed to know that that was an important part of being in New York City, that you had those artists and you had the musicians and the singers and the actors and stuff. And that's gone. Yeah. In this most recent real estate boom, the post 9/11 real estate boom, and the great diaspora of arty types, nobody seems to care. Nobody misses the arty types. Nobody could care less that they used to be here. And what is left is just sort of pure nostalgia. And when you're walking around in the Village and you know, you see the bars where, you know, you see the White Horse Tavern or whatever. And you
How
can
is
say,
that still holding on?
That guy owns that space. The family has owned that space for the longest time. I think his grandfather started it. So it's a family thing.
And
it's still, there's always people there.
I tell you, New York
Stonewall has gone through so many changes. This new Stonewall is like the 15th variation. So
New York is the only place where people are actually nostalgic for crime.
Yeah. No, I get a hard time all the time from people about, like, you know, I'm saying, you know, like, all right, the 70s, the city in a lot of ways was bottoming out. But if you were an arty type, it was a great place to be because nobody was paying you any mind. You were paying $15 a month rent, and people were making theater out of, you know, and their sets were from, they picked them up off the street. And people were like, yes, but it was the 70s. It was a horrible time in New York City.
It was a locus for creativity, because exactly why we all came here. Also, because it was affordable and because we were surrounded by other misfit culture producers. And artists were respected. And I don't know. I mean, with Williamsburg and I hate to use the word, it's become so pejorative to just be meaningless, hipster, but it's a bohemia, you know, it's off-the-rack bohemia, it's a faux bohemia.
Well, and there's always been bohemians, too. They've been around forever as well. And you know, and that goes back to, you know, in Paris in the 1820s, they were already complaining about the fake bohemians. So it that's not a new thing either. But I just think it some of it's like a kind of an economies of scale thing. It's just changed so much, so rapidly, and in such a way that, as Jeremiah says, I don't see how, in Manhattan at any rate, I don't see how downtown can come back from this unless there's a massive change in the real estate structure of downtown.
Full global economic collapse.
Yeah, I mean, when people with, like, middle-class incomes can't buy except for way the hell out in Queens.
I know. I saw that article in the Times about how Queens is going to be the new...
Here. I'm soaking in it. So, Jeremiah, you actually live in the East Village, if I'm not mistaken, don't you?
I do, yeah, I do.
I'm tracking you down.
And how's that working for you?
It's not working very well. It's actually a pretty miserable existence. I've been here for a little over 20 years, and you were saying earlier, it's become frat central. You know, it's awful. I mean, last night, you know, as every weekend, there are these howls that come up from the street of these sort of wilding, you know, frat crowds that go from sports bar to sports bar. There were no sports bars here when I moved.
I remember when you were first starting to see sports bars in the East Village. I was like, oh my God.
That's not the howl that destroyed the best minds of our generation, right, Jeremiah?
No, that would not be it. I remember when we had a nice little kickboxing school across the street from my place in Williamsburg that got turned into a notorious Coke bar. And the sound I always heard was the girls at like 1 a.m. would just start, woo!
Oh, yeah.
Woo!
What's
with the woo?
The woo girls.
I'm missing that gene.
I've never heard it before. Yeah. And now it's a constant. It's like this battle cry. It's like, I think of it as like the conquering, you know, warriors have come in and they've invaded and they're doing this battle cry to let us all know, you know, it's ours now.
It's a Sacchettini battle cry.
Oh, man. I gotta say, sports bars, I mean, TVs and bars and restaurants, this has got to be like the greatest proliferation of culture death I've ever seen. I won't even go into a restaurant if there's a TV. I mean, these giant screen TVs in a fucking sushi bar. I mean, you know, it's like,
well, out in Big Sky Country where I live now in Queens,
it's Jackson Heights, not Jackson, Wyoming.
It's like a lot of South Americans who are super into soccer, so there is a TV in every single bar. It's just different, though, because I do not hear the wooing out there.
I don't even mind that sports bars exist, but they shouldn't. They shouldn't have moved into like Greenwich Village in the East Village.
No sports bar. I've got nothing against someone going to a bar to watch the game. That seems like a very normal activity.
I've never done it in my life because I couldn't care less. But if you did, I'm sure it's a good place to go watch the game.
But I've watched many ball games in the East Village, but that's not a music bar or a jazz bar or a place to talk. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. TVs stop They're conversation everywhere. Dead.
Yeah.
And, well, TVs and their phones. Kids don't talk. Their faces are like vestigial organs now. They don't even look at each other anymore.
My old friend Ernie, who still does the Holland Bar, one of the seediest bars in New York, Rudy's and one other place, is an old-time bar guy, and he used to say the TV in the bar can only have sports of the President of the United States on it because that's the only thing that sells drinks. And he caught his guys one day. He came in during a day shift to the Holland Bar, and they were watching Days of Our Lives, and he ripped the TV out and threw it on the street.
So, Jeremiah, I wanted to ask you, what's like the, you know, Edison is up Midtown, but what's the latest causes, like, in your neighborhood? What's disappearing next?
Ooh,
Where should we go?
have to give it some thoughts. Like, what's left? You know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so little. I mean, there's Ray's Candy on Avenue A. I think that's probably not going to last much.
Ray's? Oh man.
Ray's Candy, and then you know there's DiRiberti's, and they great pastry shop for what 100+ years,
yep.
And they own the building. They have it listed. It's been listed for sale for quite a while, and they are denying that they're selling it, but they have it listed. So,
but so for the there right price,
that's one of my favorite rooms in all of that neighborhood, all of the city, really. The DiRiberti's.
Yeah, yeah.
Now DiRiberti's put in flat screen TVs, and I hate it.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah. I mean, you can't even go any. There is not one place in Hoboken that does not have a television. So I see that coming to the East Village.
So, Jeremiah, how do you answer the nostalgic attack when people say you're just being nostalgic? Shut up.
I think that people who say that are understandably in denial about the devastation that's going on right now. And I hear it a lot from Native New Yorkers, and I think that that's part of like, well, you know, we've been here all our lives, and we know that New York always changes. And like you said, that's absolutely true. But in our lifetime, you're talking about the early 1800s is the last time this happened. But in our lifetime, in you know multiple generation lifetimes, the century of New York as the culture mover, you know, is over.
Absolutely,
it's over, and we're talking about a century, century and a half.
Yeah.
Of time,
I would say 200 years, really.
200 years. Yeah. I mean, that's a good run.
Sorry,
it's something to be. I think to be upset about, and the people who are not upset about it, who are saying, New York always changes, really are not. I don't know if they're not tuned in or they're in some kind of fantasy land of unreality. But you know, if you're paying attention. It's undeniable.
I think it's nuanced, too. I mean, we've always heard a lot of people who, you know, when a bar closes, there's a lot of outcry, and everybody says, well, when's the last time you were there? When's the last time you were at the Mars Bar?
And
CBGB's hadn't honestly booked a good show in years because the people that were running it weren't really, you know, being, you know, caretakers of the culture at any point. It was kind of the booking policy was lazy, even as bands wanted to play there and loved it. And change will happen. It can't. The people that really bother me is like any change at all. But of course, when a 7-Eleven went up in my corner, I mean, I was the first guy to throw a hissy fit.
So,
I didn't want to live next to a truck stop.
What will you guys miss?
New York Times article, Genia Belafonte published that thing saying, you know, you can't really grieve if you didn't go there, and I disagree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can grieve for the overall fabric of the city and what's being lost. And these places
absolutely.
Aren't closing.
I agree with that 100%.
And what's being replaced by, too. Like, do we really need a T-Mobile
store? They're closing because
of
a lack of business. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
You know, Cafe Edison, the lunch mobs aside, they're busy all the time. They're closing because the landlord's kicking them out, and that's the story.
Right. Very good point. Another good point. It's, you know, you can be doing really well, and people are in there all the time, but if the new owners raise the rent by 3 times on you when your lease comes around,
5 times, 10 times,
where are you going to go?
I mean, Bleecker Street was wiped out because rents were going up 5, 10 times.
Yeah.
I got talked into buying a really expensive pair of earrings that I didn't need because the store had been there for like 30 years. And I was talking to the owner, and he's like, yeah, you know, Marc Jacobs. I'm like, all right, I'll buy them. They were $40.
I love these old like silver jewelry shops on like McDougal Street, you know, and like, you know, well, of course the head shops are back now, of course.
Yeah.
I want to know what you guys will miss. I was thinking about this earlier, and if Eisenberg's closed, I would like be so upset.
Well, Josh, the caretaker of Eisenberg's, I think he's down for the long haul.
Good.
I've been regular there for a long time. He's a real soldier.
Yeah, he's good.
Jeremiah, what would you miss most?
You know, the first thing that comes to mind is Julius's Bar. You know Julius is in Greenwich Village?
Yep. One of the old school gay bars,
Old school, been there for a million years, and it's just got, you walk in there and it's like stepping back into the 1930s, 40s, 50s. And unfortunately what's happening is a lot of the, you know, what I call the Sex and the City girls they've discovered it.
Boy. So they're in Julius's?
Yeah.
Oh,
because
gay guys
are so entertaining.
Yeah, and once they've discovered it,
we could do a whole show about how toxic that TV show was.
I didn't know that.
John, before we go?
You know, I do think it's sad that Boots and Saddles is getting kicked out of its space. I was in there once, like 100 years ago. But it, you know, as an institution and as a reminder of the of what the neighborhood once was, I think it's important. Now, Jeremiah, I heard that they might be getting another space somewhere in the village.
Yeah, they got a deal for another space.
All right,
yeah.
Good, fine. So,
so we're closing on a high note.
Yay!
Yay, Boots and Saddles. Thank you so much, Jeremiah, for calling
in. Thank you.
Well, as ever, it's been the fastest 30 minutes on the internet today. John, thanks very much. Hey, where can people find you and tell us one more time about your new book, please?
The Village, it's on Amazon and it's in all the bookstores and it's around.
All right.
Till next week when we drink wine.
Next week is our annual wine tasting. We've got Jean-Luc Ledoux coming back with some very special guests. All right, so for Judy and John and Liz in the booth, this is Mike Edison. See you next week on Arts and Seizures.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.